is going over to the Crew 3 podcast, and it is cold this week in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. It feels great.
But I'm also still cold, though.
I'm your host, Chris, and with me, as always, are my co-host Ricky and Ruckman. Gentlemen, say hello.
Oh, you stole it from me. I'm cold.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, so we got a busy week this week. We're going to talk about the two RCs that happened over the weekend, getting ready to start kicking off. All the slew of RCs we have coming up, two pretty exciting top eights, I would say. Then I went ahead and I asked the Discord members, hey, this Ixalan set, there's a lot of cards, actually. I mean, what do you guys think? I think this set really came out of nowhere and it's kind of just like, there's so much going on in this set. The set is very exciting.
I like the set.
Yep, it's definitely jumped from the top ropes out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? Gave the people's elbow. Doing a power bomb. Yeah. So yeah, I really did not expect much from the set. I was actively like, oh, you know, like, just get to the next one, you know? But this set has proven me very, very wrong. The people making cards are doing a very, very, very good job. The people printing the cards, however.
The people printing the cards, they're doing okay.
They're all right.
The people in charge of the people printing the cards are doing
those people. Those people are doing terrible. Okay, gotcha.
did you hear Rooney talking about how he's like, it'll be dumb, but if the stocks hit like 20%, I'm going to try and buy $20. I'm going to buy a few percent of Hasbro.
Ooh.
Not financial advice.
Get a seat at those board meetings, you know?
Rudy's like, I'll lose a few milli, but I'm in. I'm in for a few percents of Hasbro. I admire that.
They can't keep up with printing the real sets because they have to print all the fake sets.
All the commander sets.
Everyone's so excited because now Lord of the Rings 2 Electric Boogaloo, or at least a month later, gets a chance to breathe, you know? And it really needed that.
I thought it's already out.
Yeah, but, you know, now Ixalan Commander product and Commander Decks are – collector packs and Commander Decks are delayed.
Yeah.
So
– that's fine.
It needs a little more room to breathe, Ricky.
I don't need those products. Those aren't part of the game of Magic the Gathering.
But you do, though.
I don't. That's right.
I think you
– Ricky?
If you would,
Ricky?
You check under your wallet. Seat.
Ricky, I need to see in there. How much money do you have?
No.
How much money
is in there? $20. I need that $20.
Or do you want 4 booster packs of Lord of the Rings Part 2?
Oh. I don't want Lord of the Rings Part 2.
You could get a serialized card.
That's the wrong answer, Ricky. We're sending people to your house.
There are serialized cards in the Part 2.
I'm pretty sure there are. They're just different cards. I could be wrong. Who knows?
It's all illegible cards instead.
This is the real Sauron of many colors. That's right.
Right, and you get to pull the ring, but if we wrote it in a circle.
Oh.
The circle.
I don't know.
Hey, if you didn't hear, collector boosters and commander product for Ixalan is delayed.
About a week.
A week, potentially. So, that's what we were joking about there a minute ago.
Which is a shame, because Ixalan commander collector packs are going to be hot.
Could be.
I'm not really into them. I don't know. Like,
you got to YOLO a pack.
All the special cards, like all the special guests, the special guest cards are going to be insane.
I don't know. There's nothing serialized. I mean, if we were talking serialized Beckett Brass, I would be out a couple grand.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
You want that?
I want to get serialized number 69 out of 420 Chad Ochocinco in my Universes Beyond pack.
Right.
I need that to be a possibility, please.
You don't want blue Mana Crypt?
I don't want blue Mana Crypt, purple Mana Crypt.
Is it purple or pink?
I don't care.
Is it Rainbow Dash?
I'll go win the yellow one from my local LGS store that might still be around if we're lucky, you know?
It was pointed out that Applejack is the real Universes Beyond card because she lets you make any toy into a Magic card. So now we can get Goku and Luffy into Magic, finally.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just want to stop playing Universes Beyond and begin playing
Ricky,
Magic.
You can't get off Mr. Bones Wild Ride.
Oh my gosh. Can we talk about Ixalan cards, like real cards and not fake commander cards?
Yeah, do you want to start with Ixalan cards or do you want to start with RCs?
Oh, let's start with the RCs. That's more fun.
Let's get the RCs out of the way. All right, so we got two RCs this weekend. We had the Australia, New Zealand. I'm going to send you guys a bunch of different links because those events were run on Melee, and that is hard to So here's the top eight bracket for Australia, New Zealand. Here are the deck lists for Australia, New Zealand. And then here is the China. So, and then of course we have MTG Decks did a wonderful, wonderful meta matchup bracket, square, whatever you want to call it, of the big events this weekend. So we're going to kind of look at that too, because that's kind of fun. We got a lot of matches to talk about in there. So some good information. All right, let's start with Australia, New Zealand. In our bottom four, we had Jose Gabriel Alario on Boros Convoke, Willow Moon on Boros Convoke, Dennis Mullins on Rakdos Midrange, and Dylan Kikawa on Gruul Aggro. In third and fourth place, you have James Larson Scott on Lotus Field and Matthew Geeds on Rakdos Midrange. And then our finals, you have in second place Josh Bradbury on Abzan Greasefang and Brett Gervin on Boros Heroic. So a very aggressive looking top eight here. Of course, what'd your boy tell you? Greasefang was the prediction, and we get a finals appearance in our first RC. And spoilers, it won in China. So hey,
Fang Gang.
It's Fang Gang. The gang of Fang. Like,
somehow people have just forgotten to play removal spells again.
This pie bet.
And they were just like, what if all of my cards were sorcery speed?
Ricky's mad because a certain pie bet was made last week. It's not looking so good for your boy Ricky.
Well, it'll be fine because people will wake up and smell the Phoenix.
Oh.
Greasefang cannot beat Phoenix.
The matchup spread proves that to be true. The matchup spread says that Ricky is right. The matchup spread says that it is not very good for the Fang Gang on that one.
The Nate spread is also going to tell you that he does not beat Phoenix with Greasefang.
He beats me, but I think that's my lack of knowledge of the matchup and him having turn three every time. Nate. No, that's the Jun Pyle.
No. Yeah, he knows. He's like the best Greasefang player that I have, laid eyes upon in the physical realm.
Yeah,
and he has a terrible record against me. He has done it. It's not unwinnable.
Sure.
He did do it while main decking Hearses and Shieldreds.
Nate, so, the true legend. Yeah.
What a legend,
He knew he was going through the Phoenix train in order to get to that championship,
All right. But let's talk about it here. Let's talk about a winning deck list here with Boros Heroic, a deck that off to an early start, I feel like, in this format. We were talking about pretty highly because of how impactful Monstrous Rage was in our webcam event that we played. Mm-hmm. This decklist here by Brett Gervin, 3 Dreadhorde Arcanist, 4 Luminary Virtuoso, 3 10th District Legionnaire, 4 Favorite Hoplite, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, 2 Homestead Courage, 4 Ancestral Anger, 2 Specfield Hazard, 4 Reckless Rage, 4 Monstrous Rage, 4 God's Willing, 4 Defiant Strike, and a bunch of lands here. I mean,
wow, where did you find that sick, sick decklist? Because you just sent me a Twitter link.
Yes, if you click the second Twitter link and scroll down a bit.
Boom, there it is. The list looks pretty clean, right? I mean, we attack with creatures, we win prizes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Step 4, profit. So,
I mean, Monstrous Rage, oh my goodness. Monstrous Rage, as we've talked about, one mana cards that leave behind an artifact.
Yeah.
In this case, an enchantment.
Yeah, yeah. Very leave something good. Behind. Right,
yeah.
Right. It does absolutely change the matchup. Against a lot of stuff, and again, there's a lot of stuff that is just trying to almost solitaire, right? Mm-hmm. This is a deck that plays defensive cards so that Phoenix doesn't just roll over it as one of the few decks that plays interaction. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, this is a deck that the matchup against Phoenix isn't as terrible because a lot of your cards can pump your creatures out of damage range. Favorite Hoplite becomes immune to damage if you target it with anything, and a lot of the stuff you're going to target it with besides Monstrous Rage is going to make it healthier anyway. So,
Monstrous Rage still gives it +1.
It does. That's true. Yeah. It leaves the stuff behind. So,
I love the interview question here with the top interview. Brett just goes, the deck slaps Monstrous Rage plus Luminary Virtuoso. Yeah, it does. Sure does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, being able to give yourself trample has been a huge boon for this deck, as well as, again, just the metagame right now is just ripe for it.
So obviously, results speak for themselves here. How do you guys feel about Heroic versus Convoke?
Man, as somebody who has been a Convoke enjoyer,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you that this is the real deal. I love this deck. This deck is so much fun, and it is so, you can be so ahead so early in this game, and it feels amazing.
I still think both decks can kind of lose to themselves. That, you know, that's one of the problems with Heroic, is that if you just draw the wrong half of your deck, right, or the wrong two thirds of your deck, like you need, you know, not spells and lands, or you don't need more creatures and lands. You need some of the juice to go over the top, and you don't draw that, it can be definitely a little rough. You do have quite a few cards that draw you cards, right? Mm-hmm. There's several in there. So you have some cantrips, so you're not totally dead in the water, but you know, again, it's hard for me to know which side of that matchup I really want to be on. I do like the ability for Heroic to go over the top. Yeah. Right. You leave Trample behind on something. And I like that versus kind of the go wide strategy that Convoke has. Because I do feel like Solitaire, you can definitely kill faster with Heroic than you can with Convoke. But obviously with Convoke, you get a little more reach.
The rolls are colorless, right? So we don't have a possibility of losing them with God's Willing.
No, well, but if you've God's Willing in response to the...
But if you give it pro red in response,
right. Yeah, you wouldn't get your thing.
But I'm just saying, like, it won't fall off after the fact.
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
One
of the big things here has to be just, if you can stick Dreadhorde Arcanist, you're just, like, in the business, right?
Yeah.
You're just in the business.
It's the little bit of reach that you have, and that's, again, one of the things that Convoke has, is Convoke has the 4/4 that goes and fetches other creatures.
Mm-hmm. Dreadhorde is, of course, being one of those classically powerful Pioneer cards that I feel like has kind of dropped, it's kind of really dropped off after, like, what, like, the first year of the format, and just, like, remember when just Rakdos Arcanist was, like, the thing to be doing?
Yeah, I think your problem there is that just Rakdos Sack proved to be significantly better. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right? Like, our higher-end threats got better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not playing as much Shieldred in the Arcanist version, and Shieldred is just one heck of a card.
And we also don't have Lurrus anymore, so.
Right, exactly right, yeah. So that does make a difference for sure.
All right, I mean, any other deck that you want to talk about here? I mean, anything going on with this Lotus build? We had two Rakdos mid-range lists. The Gruul list, of course, on 4 Huntsmen, 4 A Crow in War, 2 Thrill Seeker, 1 Roommate Splitting Rent, though. That's interesting to include. Don't really see that one a whole lot, but hey.
Only one Obliterating Bolt.
Well, we only need to kill Shieldred once, right?
That doesn't kill Shieldred.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Well,
interesting,
you know,
that in the Chinese metagame, people are not as in love with the Picklock Pranksters.
We're not there yet.
One to
we're
two.
Still I mean, in New Zealand, going, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We're talking over.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything really else to kind of talk about here. So let's, I mean, if you guys don't have anything else to talk about in New Zealand, we can move on to what Chris is wanting to bring up in China here. All right. Yeah. Chris, I mean, it's your jumping head. Why don't you break down what is in this top 8 for us?
Yeah, the top 8 of the China Open, which looks like it's brought to you by Haruya, or at least they just did the...
Maybe they did the
deck list thing.
They're hosting the deck lists. This is MTG China Open. Haruya is a Japanese company.
If the order here is correct, the first place was Abzan Greasefang, bringing up number one. Number two was Raksak. Number three was Izzet Phoenix. Fourth place was Waste Knot. Fifth place, another Izzet Phoenix list. Sixth place is Boros Convoke. Seventh place is Rona Luka Combo. And eighth place is Rakdos Midrange. Most of these decks look pretty stock to me. Abzan Greasefang for sure looks pretty similar.
Let's see. The double, it's not on any of the vessel.
The vessel nascency.
Yeah,
we're on no vessel. We're on 3 Sky Sovereign here. And Collective Brutality in the main board, as well as Murderous Rider.
And one copy of Duress.
Yeah. I like that you can tutor Murderous Rider off of your Traverse. So, like, if you just need a removal spell, you can go find one, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Big troop.
One Liliana in the deck. I don't think you could tutor with that. But other than that, seems basically stock. No basic forest, which makes sense because if you cast your Traverse, you already have green. So, don't need to get a basic forest.
You don't need to be getting that. Yeah.
2 Dread Knight in the sideboard.
Yeah, solid card.
Yeah,
solid card. I think like people are still learning how to play, right? I mean, people get really greedy with that card, I think, and they're just so focused on just let it go to the bin. Just don't.
No,
don't
no, no. I have to pass the adventure.
No, you just
I have to, or else I lost value.
play it as a 3/2 and forget about it. That's how you play that card, people. Chris, you were talking about the Phoenix this year. What were you?
Yeah, just most people, especially in the U.S. metagame, have heavily adopted a picklock prankster as a 2-mana instant versus a 3-mana sorcery, right? And then here, I don't see that conversion, right? You see one in the top list, and then two in the second list. Still really liking your pieces of the puzzle. Now, again, you know, I like pieces of the puzzle. It gets you that one extra card, but picklock still, you know, mills you and gets you one of your important cards back for one less mana at instant speed. So I could see it. I actually do prefer picklock prankster in conjunction with Is It Charm, because it gives you that flexibility to do both. Right. That's one of the reasons I really like Is It Charm. So, you know, again, if you're not doing one, you can do the other. It still plays fine with Spell Pierce, right? You can say, hey, if you don't have something for me to Spell Pierce, then I'll picklock Prankster. But you can usually playing a couple Spell Pierce, and that can be sometimes loose because, you know, you can't cast that on your chain of spells, otherwise it stops one of your spells. So, again, Spell Pierce, not the best there. Whereas, again, you can always cast a Is It Charm. So, again, you know, that may be one of the reasons that they have found, but most of the Phoenix aficionados that I know are switching over to the old Prankster. They're pranking it.
These are all iteration Temporal Trespass lists too.
They are. Yeah, they are all on that combo more.
Which, in my opinion, with like things like Demi Lich and stuff like that, you really don't need that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's running Demi Lich. There's also no things in the ice in like either of these 75s. Maybe we can just claim Mono Green is dead.
There's some in the sideboard. Yeah, there's some in the sideboard. Yeah, it's wild to me because I have heard that Shredder's better against everything else. I guess because your removal's so good. I have definitely liked Thing in the Ice. Just it's so good against aggro, right? And it presents such a clock. So I'm just a big lover of Thing in the Ice, but maybe I'm too blinded by my love to adopt the Ledger Shredder. Because the Ledger Shredder's obviously just more velocity, right? Every second spell, you get more draw and discard, which maybe that would help me find some of the cards I'm looking for better. So, right. You know, again, that was the statements I heard was, hey, this is better against our non-green metagame, right? You don't need Thing in the Ice against some of these aggro decks. You got so much removal. So we'll see how it pans out.
So, yeah. Hey, I mean, look, I was calling it. People are starting off praying for Mono Green. Mono Green's going to come back. Another Green's Fang. Listen to your boy. Your boy's got his head on the pulse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mono Green will still be around.
You know, I got everything on the pulse, Chris.
Okay, you got it all on the pulse.
I am the Senate, all right?
Okay. yeah. Some people merely adopted the pulse, you know?
That's right. Can we just take a second to talk about how Waste Not made this top four? Like,
It's easy.
I don't want to look at that.
You just eat Phoenix players. I just like, this deck is just sort of I'm going to hear to beat Phoenix players. I guess now they're playing 3 Path of Peril, so maybe they're also getting Convoke players, right?
Yeah.
And they're main decking Meathook Massacre. Yeah, we're just getting Convoke and Phoenix players. And if we play against exactly that, we can't lose Kavrkek the Merciless in the sideboard to beat up on Mono Green if we ever run into it.
It also beats up on Sacrifice.
No cats.
Yeah. No cats, no nothing. Rona here. Like, I still...
this deck is so unbelievably bad. You're afraid to say it, but I'll say it. Right? I'm out here. You're like, oh, the Rona deck. Oh, my co-hosts have no spine. I'm out here to call this deck bad.
Wow.
I'm out here calling this deck bad. It is garbage. It doesn't make sense why we're playing 3 Bring to Light in our Yorian deck. It doesn't make sense why we're playing 3 Karn in the Karn deck. It doesn't, nothing makes sense here. I can't figure it out. You can't figure it out. It's just a lot of really good players that have been able to convince the world that this is a good deck.
Yeah, I think the deck does powerful stuff. I have seen a lot of critique of the Karn package in amongst the Magic Twitterverse, the Magic Spheres, you know? I have seen a lot of criticism of that, and I've seen some of the top players that... I follow swapping out the Karn package and then going, hey, look, I think this feels a little more natural. You know, the Karn package is a little clunky, but
look, I get that we've left the Dread Boars at home, right? Mm-hmm. And like that has to be why we're losing to Valky, right? Just the economy's in shambles. As I thought we as a society have learned to beat just a big dumb idiot angel and a big dumb idiot planeswalker.
We can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going wide, you can, right? That's the big deal here is, like, you don't get to beat all that stuff, you know? But, you know, you've got a power of combo, right? People have been Rona comboing since Rona got printed, right?
Yeah.
People have been comboing it out. So this is just the newest iteration. It's never quite gone away, right? It always, you know, if you get lucky enough, you can do that. And here's enough of a supporting cast where it's like, well, if I don't Rona combo, I'm also just going to get myself a Atraxa, you know?
Like, you get a shot, right? Like, Luka, like, targets, right? It's exile target creature you control. So you don't even have to kill the Atraxa. You just kill whatever Dungus they target with Luka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's polymorph effects.
So.
Yeah, it targets.
It's like.
But what if they target Sylvan Carry, did Ricky?
Ooh.
That's true. You're correct.
Or an untapped other
Luka thing. Resolve.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing 7 elves, not 8. Like, it's just. This deck is.
They have 14 mana dorks.
This deck is amateur hour. I don't get it. And I don't know why everybody copy and paste the same list. Like, that's how I know. I think that's what they did, right? Is the person who made this deck was like, I'm going to make these numbers look really stupid and nonsensical, and then I can tell who's just copied my homework, right?
Mm.
Sure. And it turns out it's like, oops, the entire Magic community is copying your homework.
The old put the hair in the door trick, right? You know, if it's not there, somebody was messing with your stuff. I see what you're saying.
LSV once put like Ogre Cleaver in his sideboard in the standard deck just to see if he could get more people to play Ogre Cleaver, even though they didn't know why they were playing it.
Yeah.
Why didn't Kibble try that with Daybreak Ranger?
I don't know.
He would have been a gold mine. He could have been the Suze Orman of Daybreak Rangers, you know?
What a reference.
Unless you watched Oprah in the early 2000s, you're going to have no idea what I'm talking about.
So, like, real talk here. I mean, hopefully a braid being strapped to Dreadborg gets people playing real removal spells again.
Which is weird, because then they just reprint a braid anyway.
They did recently reprint a braid, yeah.
Well, I think it's in the set somewhere, either in a list or something.
It is in the set, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Wow.
This is rare in sorcery speed. What'd you say, Ricky?
A braid isn't in the set.
It is.
It is definitely in the set. Hey, also, like one Ricky that I saw on the tweeters, I had the heck of a time trying to figure out what rarities were what. The Doll of the Gold.
The image compression is not great on these set symbols.
So you just look at the bottom left corner for the U, the R, or the C.
You got to look for the letter now, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I get that. It's not like it's a lifelong problem that I'm struggling to overcome or anything. Oh, it was just one of those things that, like, welcome to class, Ricky.
So starter course.
No, that card's new. Never been seen before in all of Magic history.
There is a very exciting reprint of the set, though, that I'm sure we'll celebrate here in a second.
Yeah, there's a couple really cool ones for sure. But anyway, just wanted to give my 2 cents on the set symbol really throwing me for a loop here.
There was, I mean, because what, Nate thought the Guardian from Zelda was an uncommon?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the rares I thought were common.
Oh, really? I could see, yeah.
You just got to look for the sticker.
Yeah, look for the acorn.
Look for the acorn.
It's just a bad set symbol, unfortunately.
So, I mean, do you guys want to talk about the chart matrix here real quick? I mean, there's kind of... I don't think I'd be surprised. Actually, okay. Remember, like, last season, or towards the end, people were like, oh, Rakdos Sacrifice has a great, actually a pretty decent mono-green matchup. No, they don't. I've been sitting here saying you people are crazy. And look at this. Numbers don't lie. They spell disaster.
For you. who's the genetic freak? That's what I want to know.
I'm a genetic freak.
Okay, gotcha.
When Bip Hop a Pump comes around.
Uh-huh.
I just don't believe this. The best stat on here is definitely 4-color Rona versus mono-white.
Mono-white, 2 matches, 0%.
And then also Rakdos Sacrifice versus 4-color Rona.
Absent Grease Fang against Spirits. We know who's winning that matchup.
Show them the tat.
Show them the tat, that's right. People show them the tat. Yeah, so what do we have here? So over this last weekend, our winningest deck was Boros Convoke. Oh, sorry, Azorius Control, actually. That's got to be fake. That's fake news.
Well, that means that all 4 players that showed up had a combined yeah. had a combined 7-3 record before they got tired and drew out. Like they yeah. won three matches, they drew the rest of them. That's a winning record. You know what I'm saying? Sure. Like I think that's the problem again. I do not think this is the format for blue white control right now. Again, I think if you're going to do Lotus Field shenanigans, great, but you have to be able to complete a match in 50 minutes, and most players cannot do that right now, especially with the threats being so powerful. You just do not have enough consistent answers.
Look, after my recent experience with Grand Archive, I'm surprised anyone can finish a match in less than 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you the best I can do is 35 minutes.
Ooh,
all about best I can Phoenix, do. 52% win rate.
Boros Convoke, though, 54. So, I mean, what do we got?
I'm going to tell you that your bad matchup of 43% to Rakdos midrange, that's not real. You can take percentage points. That matchup is full of agency, and you have to reach out and take it because the Rakdos midrange player doesn't want it. They are afraid of agency. That's why they play Shieldred.
Yeah, I haven't lost that matchup thanks to guidance from Ricky. I mean, Ricky really just put him on Planeswalker Magic.
Can you get percentage points against Mono White, Lotus Field, Boros Convoke, or Azorius Control?
I can't get any. The Lotus Field matchup, I think, is 33%. It's really generous. I was like, that matchup's so impossible. Like, I need to play Invasive Surgery and get real lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. How does it feel playing that card after making fun of it for so long?
I haven't bought mine yet, but I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Really, like, the problem is, like, Change the Equation doesn't hit Brilliant Ultimatum by one man.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is really upsetting.
I mean, is there anything that kind of shocks you? I mean, man, Azorius Spirits feels pretty low to me at 54%, but it looks like the meta came out to fight it, feels like.
So, I mean, I think the Mono White Humans with Izzet Phoenix, I think that percentage is as low as it is right now, is because that we have fallen from God and Thing in the Ice.
Mm, right.
And yes, if you run Ledger Shredder out there, you're going to get whomped.
Sure. Just
stomped on. But you play those Things in the Ices and you don't block into the stupid land,
right?
You'll be fine.
Right. As long as you don't have a Gonjo mana up.
Don't have Gonjo. You're safe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else surprising in this matrix you want to talk about? I mean, I feel like everything here is pretty self-explanatory. I don't think anything is really too surprising.
I enjoy all the really random, like, 0% like win rates. Like Grease Fang can't beat spirits for some reason.
Shacklegeist.
Yeah. Grawl Vehicles really can't touch Boros Convoke at all. There's some like really funny ones, in my opinion. But other than that, like, this is, as I said, it's a game where all these stats are nice, but like ultimately player agency is what's going to win you the points you need to get where you want to go. Your play skill, like when every deck is like within, like, most of the decks within 2 to 3 points of overall win rate.
Yeah.
That's what you want to see in a healthy meta, right?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're very spot on. I mean, like, obviously, Azorius Control is pretty ahead here, and then there's Spirits at 45%. But everything's kind of within, like, 2 or 3 points of 50%, which is very good. I think Pioneer is just in a great spot right now.
I agree.
What do you think?
Oh, there was no four color vehicles or no vehicles or Rona players ever touched each other.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we've been saying it this whole time, right? This is the format of attacking and blocking. Planeswalkers don't rule it. Free spells don't rule it.
Well, a Planeswalker tends to rule it, but we can ban him and be fine.
Yeah, that's a good one. For sure. We just need to delete War of the Spark. But I mean, and we just keep getting bangers. We keep getting banger standard sets.
War of the Spark. I could stop paying people in it.
Yeah. We keep getting
banger. My landlord's really confused whenever I go pay my rent with 10 boxes of War of the Spark.
they don't want to hit them. Man, yeah. I mean, we keep getting banger standard sets that keep coming out of Pioneer and keep helping out. I really, with this set, there's, again, just mechanics that just make me want 2-set blocks at least. You know, something where it's just like, give me a little splash more of these mechanics so I can actually make a deck of them. Because the only problem that I have with Pioneer is it is just a lot of strong cards, right? Like, there's some combo, but a lot of that combo revolves on, like, well, Grease Fang's just a one-man army, you know,
and
can do its thing. Like, that card's insanely powerful with Parhelion. Otherwise, you don't have quite enough synergy decks, right? You've got Phoenix and spells, but that's a card printed a long time ago. So I don't feel like we have quite enough synergy such that only the really, really powerful cards, your Shieldreds, Karn, I guess, but again, printed a while ago. Well, only the really, really strong cards seem to impact.
One thing I really enjoy with the design of this set is a lot of the what would be kind of parasitic mechanics, right? In Explore, at least in the terms of Pioneer, we do have a lot of Ixalan to fall back on.
Right.
Meanwhile, the other mechanics are just kind of like reminder words. Like Descend is how many permanents do you have in your graveyard, right? Did a permanent go into your graveyard this turn? Or you have Discover, which is not parasitic, really. Like, right? It's just like you get it's fixed cascade. So I do like that aspect. I think if we see sets kind of head this direction going forward, I think it's a great way of kind of going almost Yu-Gi-Oh-esque with like the whole legacy support idea, right? Where we can bring back and hold up these older archetypes, other formats, whereas we're putting out new mechanics that are just kind of flavor worded mechanics and just similar interactions.
Yeah. And again, I, as we'll see, right, Explore does make a pretty huge comeback with this set. So to be fair, they are coming back years later and adding additional mechanics. And maybe that's just how we'll be. I don't know how we're going to have the second murder at Karlov Manor. That's one that I feel like we would up security and prevent further murders. You know what I'm saying? But
they knew what they were doing.
They knew what they were getting into. So I'm excited to see how we go back to the manor, right? Again, to bring back some mechanics. But I just want a few more. I feel like some of these mechanics are so close to impacting Pioneer. I really love some more synergy decks versus just some, hey, these are really strong cards.
Still got some spoilers coming out, I think. The set's not fully out, but I think we're pretty much out of the rares and mythics. So also, I was really glad to see that, hey, we are putting a god in every color. I was kind of worried there for a little bit that we weren't going to get a blue or a green god.
Yeah, the blue one. I got some words in the blue one. I'd love it if we could jump into some spoilers here and
get going. I think we can kind of. Do you want to talk about the blue god real quick, and then we can kind of look at what the Discord kind of wants us to talk about. We'll throw in some of the cards here and there as we do want to talk about and see them. And I think we'll kind of end on not our top five just yet, but our kind of the cards we're really considering towards the end here. So Chris, why don't you talk about the blue god real quick, and then we'll go into some of the big asks from the Discord members.
Yeah, you got it. The blue god, big fan of. I will definitely be casting this card. O'Hare, I'm just going to call it Peck Paddock. I'm just saying the Q's are K's, and that's how I'm pronouncing it. People can roast me on tweeters later. Anyway, it costs 2 colorless and double blue. It's a 4/3 legendary creature god. It flies. Of course it does. It's a flying Quetzalcoatl, something like that.
It's a coddle.
It has a pretty insane ability on this. The static on this is pretty nuts. So whenever you cast an instant spell from your hand, it gains rebound. For those of you not old enough to remember rebound, you exile it as it resolves, and you do what it says. It rebounds. You cast it at the beginning of your next upkeep. You may cast it without paying its mana cost. You know, they just brought straight about it. They didn't say, oh, you can play it again next turn, like some of the kind of feather shenanigans or whatever, where you get it back. You just straight up get those spells again. So we just get to cast spells so nice we can cast them twice. And then when it dies, we return to the battlefield tapped and transformed under its own control with 3 time counters on it. So the backside, it's a land. It's the Temple of Cyclical Time. This one is not a legendary land for whatever reason. So you could, I guess, theoretically have 2 of these going if you needed to. But it just taps for blue and you can remove a time counter from it. And then you can pay.
I don't think any of the lands are legendary.
One of them is, but it's not on a creature, maybe. Maybe it's on one of the artifacts I saw.
Is it the Enigma Jewel?
Maybe. I think maybe it's one of the reprinted ones.
The Enigma Yes.
The Gaia's Cradle, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah, Growing Rites is legendary, yes.
Sure. So we can add a blue and incidentally remove a time counter from it. Then we can pay 2 colorless and a blue and tap it to transform it. And you can activate it only, of course, if it has no time counters on it. That gets us back, and it has to be as a sorcery activation. That gets us back our O'Hare.
Yeah.
Paddock. So
the last time we saw Rebound and Standard was Dragons, right?
Yeah, Dragons.
It was the Ojutai mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to be Debbie Downer on this card.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So God Eternal Kefnet kind of exists already. And that card's not good enough
to say. I'm sorry. What card? What card, Ricky?
God Eternal Kefnet.
That's not a real card.
It is, in fact, a real card from Ruckman's very own boxes of War of the Spark, which is a 4-mana, 4/5 flyer that says we reveal the first card we draw every turn. If it's an instant or a sorcery, we copy it, and it costs 2 less to cast. Not exactly rebound, for sure, but better stats and a little bit more nuance with the ability, because it does instants and sorceries. It makes them cost less initially. And then also it comes back to our hand. Or third from the top. Is that what it does?
Right. This
it goes back third from the top. So I don't think it's an even comparison, but I think it's a similar comparison. And I think that that card doesn't die to Fiery Impulse, and this guy does.
That's fair. This card is easier to kill. The ability on the Deepest Epic is significantly better, right? Because we're not casting or hoping to copy a bunch of pieces of the puzzle that are on top of our deck. We are recasting a bunch of considers, ops, right? We're casting a bunch of 1-mana spells potentially in our Phoenix or Thing in the Ice deck.
For a second, I thought we were actually casting epic spells. I was like, oh.
Right. We're casting Enduring Ideal. And we're going to recast it.
Did I miss an epic spell in this set?
As an instant. Right. Removal spells, right? We're going to be recasting 1-mana removal spells, things like that, right? The big deal is that we're not trying to cast a bunch of 2s. Right, we're mostly casting a bunch of 1s that we're then going to recast next turn. It is unfortunate this card does die easier, but you do get a land out of it, right? Like, when this thing dies, it ramps you. And then again, incidentally, you can just remove time counters from it. Whenever the time is right, you get your 4/3 back. I see it as somewhat similar to a Demi-Lich. Maybe it's just worse than a Demi-Lich because Demi-Lich can cost less. But
I do think this is like either the second or third best of this God cycle.
Sure.
But I don't know about it. I don't know. I love your enthusiasm for it, but only instance gets a gain rebound.
This is true. And this is true.
You know what I don't want to rebound? My Mystical Dispute. You know?
Very true. So very true.
I agree, though. Considers, if we're rebounding considers, that's awesome. But we're not rebounding. Can we rebound the adventure spell? That's interesting.
No.
What happens if our adventure spell gains rebound?
It exiles, right? Oh, that's a good question.
I'm saying you can cast it.
You probably cast it, right? Because it goes off. Because putting the adventure in exile, so it's in exile.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It says you can cast it. I'm gonna say you can cast it.
What happens if we cast the creature though? It's not in exile anymore, so we can't. It's interesting.
Good question. That's how we get Valky.
Well, we can. Yeah. What if we rebound it as the creature?
Yeah,
that's worse.
This is how we end up with both us and our opponent getting a win.
Right.
I'm just saying, yeah, if I cast Stomp Giant. Like sure. The stomp path, right?
Mm-hmm.
With this guy in play, it'll rebound, and then can I rebound and just cast the giant for free?
We'll have to wait for the FAQ to come out.
Ooh, it'll be an interesting FAQ.
All right. Well, before we dive into viewer's pitch, I just want to say, look, Wizards, I've been down you these last few weeks, but you listened, and you reprinted Resplendent Angel in a standard legal set. Round of applause, everybody. We did it. We got there. Everyone can play Angels now. Just go buy your Youthful Valkyries before they spike too.
Oh, my God.
All right. So let's move on from Resplendent Angel, and let's talk about some of these viewer requests. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't start with Miss Amalia Benavides Aguirre. This is the hype for the set, right?
Good pronunciation.
This is the hypest card of the set, right? White and a black for a 2/2 legendary creature, Vampire Scout. Ward, pay 3 life. Whenever you gain life, Amalia Benavides Aguirre explores. Then if Amalia's power is exactly 20, destroy all other creatures. Which is a fun effect because, of course, Aguirre is a reference to an old movie also about the Wrath of God. So, you might be thinking, Ruckman, How are we going to – we just gain some life. We explore.
How are we going to explore that many times, Ruckman?
Well, let me remind you of a card that I actually really enjoyed, an early Pioneer. Should we talk about like budget deck lists? I had a friend who played budget hardened scales back in the day, and this deck was hot.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to an uncommon from OG Ixalan by the name of Wild Growth Walker. And I'm sorry if you're like me and wanted to pick up your foils. They're sold out. They're $1 million. So good luck. I'll see you fighting for the Turbo Man doll.
Yep.
Anyway, Wild Growth Walker, one and green for a 1/3 elemental. Whenever a creature you control explores, put a woman counter Wild Growth Walker and you gain 3 life. So as long as we either explore or gain life with both of these on the field, we have a loop to get Amalia up to 20, and then she'll blow up the world, but yep. She will keep triggering after the fact. So that's pretty fun.
There you go.
So now the big question is, what are we doing after we blow up the world, right? How are we winning after we have this big dumb vampire?
They killed everything else?
They kill everything else, right? Let me tell you. The answer is in a card from Midnight Hunter Crimson Vow. A Crimson that I really enjoyed. It's a card called Voice of the Blessed. Because Voice of the Blessed, as long as we have 10 counters of Voice, because Voice of the Blessed is a Soul Sister, or it's not a Soul Sister, it's a Pride Man effect, right? That gets counters.
Sure.
Once we hit 10 counters on Voice of the Blessed, it gains indestructible.
Ooh. Cannot be destroyed, you say?
Yeah, that's correct.
Are we just going to build like an Abzan Heliod pile?
Yeah.
Is that the goal?
That's the goal.
Bye-bye Jund pile.
Oh, hello. My God.
Heliod pile. That's right.
Yeah. Do we have Spike Feeder and Pioneer?
No, if only, right? I mean, talk about a great way. It's just such an exciting. I think it's a card effect. I think when Aguirre was spoiled, I mean, this two-card combo was just everywhere, right? I think it's a lot of great ways to build hype in the Pioneer format because, look, let's be real here. You're not casting, but you're going to get Grief to Oblivion already if you're playing this in Modern, right?
That's right.
Pioneer is the one place we can do this because, look, Commander, we don't talk about that here.
That's not our thing.
That's not our thing. But Pioneer, we're going to make this happen.
Crew 3, a what podcast?
A pioneer podcast. You know what else gains life to help this start this chain of effects going?
What does?
And is in Abzan colors?
Grease.
A lot of cards.
One Siege Rhino.
Wow. I wish I knew what Siege Rhino was in Spanish so I could continue the joke, but I don't.
I mean, what do you guys think? Even if we don't have the loop, this card is sick, off your collecting companies.
That's what I'm saying. Dust off your collecting companies. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Reach into that box.
The right way, you know?
That's right. Bend them in just the right way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Bend it like Beckham. Cast them on the upkeep.
Bend it like Beckham. That's exactly right. Make sure you get your foil collected companies, you know? And in go play in an RC, you know? No, I'm excited about this. I think there's definitely potential here, right? I think, like you said, there's who knows the combos, right? Abzan has all kinds of stuff. Tyvar gets you creatures back, right? These both cost 2. I think there's significant combo potential here. You gain a bunch of life, right? Which is going to be really hard to deal with. And then murder everything, right? I mean, you kind of built your own thing in the ice, right? Like instead of bouncing everything back, we kill everything. And then we're left with a giant, you know, creature on the battlefield. So, yeah, I'm definitely excited. I think this is, you know, relatively easy to find, relatively easy to get some of these combo pieces back. You know, again, we're in Abzan, so we get can't stay away in case any of our creatures dies. These guys.
There's also a new card we could play. We could play.
The one mana white one.
Yeah, the one mana. Where is it at? Helping Hand. We can play Helping Hand.
The big thing with this, obviously, is that if we collected company on our opponent's instep, and have a way to gain life.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. We murder everything. Our guy no longer has summon sickness and we attack for 20. Right. That's some of the huge game that's kind of part of the dream as far as getting to activate this combo on your opponent's instep.
Yeah.
And going off that way. So,
I mean, all we need is Prosperous Innkeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Any kind of effect like that. Does Gallagreeters do it? Does that gain you a life or no?
Gallagreeters can gain you life, yes.
Yeah, one of the abilities would be gaining life, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember if that only triggered off elves or creatures or what it did.
That's creature.
Nice. So
another our next request is Sentinel of the Nameless City, 2 and a green for a 3/4 Merfolk Warrior Scout with Vigilance. Whenever Sentinel of the Nameless City enters the battlefield or attacks, create a map token. Is this the second coming of Tireless Tracker?
Yeah. Kind of agree. Tireless Tracker, unfortunately, hasn't had its day in Pioneer, and I think this is close, right? If you have some Merfolk shenanigans you can pull, because this does has Vigilance, so you can't attack with it and then do a lot of like the tap shenanigans that sure. Merfolk are seeming to want to do from this set. But map tokens seem like...
Worse than blood.
Yeah, they seem like creativity fodder. You know what I'm saying? Like, it seems like that's what I want to do with them.
The map tokens is... You have to have a creature to you also have to have a creature to explore.
Yeah.
And sorcery speed.
Yeah.
Are they really sorcery speed only?
Yeah.
I did not see that part yet. Wow. Bummer. Bummer, bummer. Yeah.
So I mean, look, I'm all for, I mean, this is a big body. I like it. It gives us some card advantage after the fact. But yeah, if Tireless Track is not getting there anymore, I don't think this is quite getting there either.
Yeah.
We already talked about Spelunking last week. Mm-hmm. Legendary Drawn to the Battlefield untapped. I mean, Lotus Field kind of seems like the option. I mean, I've seen some people talk about, at least in the Discord, talk about Gates as well. I don't know. This is what Gates is entirely looking for. I think Gates needs to survive the game rather than just kind of play the long con.
Yeah, I mean, if this was just the front half of Uro,
sure.
I think we'd be in business. You know, like
yeah.
draw a card, put a land into play, gain some life. And then that second ability, I think this would be like a stellar card, you know. But I think as it is, it's close. Again, I think you could definitely be doing some shenanigans in your Gates deck. But you know, again, you really don't want multiples. Like, are you going to tutor for this? What are you going to do? You
yeah.
know? So,
Bartolome del Presidio, we talked about a little bit last week. That's the white and a black for 2/1 legendary vampire knight. Sacrifice of the creature artifact. Give Bartolome. Give him +1/+1 encounter.
Card's good.
I think card is definitely very good. The big thing here is obviously having another free sac effect in Pioneer. Eventually, these are going to break something.
Yep, definitely relevant. There's a reason a lot of these have activated ability costs on them, and mm-hmm. this one not could definitely be relevant, especially if we ever get something that they just accidentally don't really look at because they don't test the set enough, and we get another Thopter Foundry, you know, sort of the meek type effect. You know, you just never know, right? And then this kind of – and it's +1/+1 counter, which I think is obviously a pretty big upgrade over +1/+1 to the end of the turn. Whether or not you would anything, you don't have to get too cute with that, right? I'm not saying this is necessarily a scales card, but it does get permanently larger, and then that can help you over multiple turns. You know,
I think this also leads to, if you're looking to try some fun budget stuff, I think cards like Hidden Stockpile, decks like that become more interesting, right? We could potentially mm-hmm. look at maybe even like an Abzan sack list, going back to kind of more artifacts, Oni Cult Anvil, things like that. There's a lot of stuff you can do with this card, I mean, because it is artifact or creature as well.
Yep.
This card, it might not do it. It's probably not doing anything just yet, right? But this is a card that is, I think, always going to be in the back of a lot of players' minds when it comes to this format.
Yeah, I think whether or not you want to use Vampire or Knights is kind of up to you. Obviously, people have been pointing out, hey, look, there's a 1/1 that comes into play and makes a map token. There's, you know, there's Thraven Inspector. You know what I'm saying? There's, I don't think there's a 1 mana black one yet, so you might have to drip into Mardu for Voltaren Epicure, but there's plenty of creatures that come into play with accessories these days, and this could just be a black white beats card, whether or not you get a vampire or not. Obviously, you already have the I'm going to call it an expedition, but it's not the 1 mana white enchantment that comes into play and makes a 1/1 token, but then you attack and it can flip into lands, but it makes a lifelinker. But you guys know what I'm talking about. 1 mana, yeah. 1 mana white enchantment. It's played in Kavok sometimes. Comes into play, makes a 1/1 lifelinker. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly right. So
Legion Landing, yeah, yeah.
Legion's Landing, that's right. Yeah. So there's a lot of vampire tokens to be made out there. And, you know, if they're not pulling their weight anymore, you can sack them off to Bartolome and get some shenanigans going. So
all right. Cutsill, Malamute Exemplar, 1 green and a white for a 3/3 cat war, legendary creature cat warrior. Your opponents can't cast spells during your turn. And whenever one or more creatures you control, each with power greater than its base power, deals combination to player, draw a card. I'm not as excited about this one as I was with the four-man one that keeps growing our board bigger, right? Yeah. Grand Abolisher effects are neat, and I'm sure there's like a there's going to be some deck where we want to protect a combo with this. But if I'm thinking about like Celestia Hate Bears, I'm thinking I want an opponent to cast spells on my turn because I have Voice Resurgence on the field.
Voice Resurgence, yeah. Yeah. I'm exactly with you. I think the problem is like most people are casting spells on their own turn because the most interactive deck, which I'm going to argue is Phoenix playing the most burn spells, right? It wants to play those on its own turn to get its Phoenixes back, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's one of those things where what deck is really casting spells on your turn except for blue-white? And if that's the case, again, you can probably just play Voice of Resurgence because if they cast spells, you get them. If they Wrath, you get them because you leave a guy behind, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at on this card. Again, it could be relevant in the sideboard for sure, but I'm just not sure that I see the benefit of a 3-mana card when 3 mana is a lot in Pioneer. You know, you can be casting Katilda, right? Sure. Brutal Cathar. There's a lot of 3-mana spells that really turn the tide of games, mm-hmm. and this one does not seem to do that. So
this could actually be like a sideboard piece, maybe for like a Grease Fang type deck, which is has no strategy to playing things like Silence,
sure,
cards like that, right? So yep. we're trying to do something powerful in our main phase and wants to stop our opponent, right? And having a board isn't the worst thing in the world. So I think that's where we're more seeing this. I don't think more so in like a Hate Bear type strategy.
You're right. I think it's exactly it. It's some kind of creature combo.
Too many hoops to draw the card.
Yeah. All right. We have next Deeps, which I think is the cave, right? Echoing Deeps.
This is on my list. Yeah. Of cards.
So Echoing Deeps, legendary land cave. Sorry, not legendary. You may have Echoing Deeps enter the battlefield tapped as a copy of any land card in a graveyard except a cave in addition to its other types.
It's Vesuva, but it's Vesuva that you can choose if you need it to be just come into play untapped as a colorless land.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to just cast whatever spells or whatever, you can just play this, not copy anything, and be a cave that taps for colorless mana. Otherwise, then this is just Vesuva. So any deck that wants to stack up multiple copies of the same kind of land or wants to just copy a land, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this does not work because it enters the battlefield as the copy.
Yeah.
So not work with Lotus Field the way you want it to work with Lotus Field.
You can get a Lotus Field, but you still have to sack for it.
But you still have to sack, yeah. It's a land card. It's only in the graveyard?
Yeah, it's only in the graveyard. It's not Vesuva.
Oh, I misread this card. I thought this was
Vesuva. It's body double, but Vesuva.
Oh, this card's less good.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I thought this was Vesuva. I didn't read.
Yeah, it has to be in the graveyard. So
Deeps is kind of funny. I didn't think you could have Deeps.
Echoing Deeps?
Wouldn't it be Echoing Depths?
How many DPS does this card do?
It does Deeps.
What's this card's DPM?
Tons of damage.
Yeah. So that is the thing, right? Is we what lands are we wanting to self-mill here? Like, do we want like are we trying to self-mill away like a Lotus? Like, I guess buying back something like a sacrifice land could be interesting. We don't really have great sacrifice lands. Like
way worse than I thought it was because it doesn't copy what's already in play.
Yeah, it has to be from the graveyard.
Yeah, so that's kind of like way lamer. Because who's killing your Lotus Field, right? Nobody.
Yeah.
Never mind. This card's pretty bad, but it is a cave, which does matter on some of these cards.
It does matter. All right, next one is Squirming Emergence, which has some of the best flavor text, by the way, this card. One black green for a sorcery with Fathomless Descent. Return to the battlefield. Target non-land permanent card in your graveyard with mana value equal to or less than the number of permanent cards in your graveyard.
This reads really weird.
Yeah.
But essentially you get to return any permanent back to play for 3 mana.
As long as it's
less than the value. Total number of permanents in your graveyard.
Correct.
This does not combo with my God Pharaoh's gift.
Sure.
And so this does not spark joy, you know? I think my problem here is that early in the game, unless you've got a way to just, you know, magically flip half your deck, this may be getting you back a 3-cost permanent. If you're lucky, right? Is the permanence non-land permanence or just say permanents?
Non-land permanent.
It does say non-land. I mean, that's brutal, right? I mean, the amount of creatures you would have to get back.
Sorry. It counts
all permanents in your graveyard.
It counts all permanents.
You can't reanimate
land.
So lands get back, and then we're looking to get back some frisky artifact or enchantment that maybe like has some additional cost when you cast it, but it's fine to get back. You know, but again, my big one here is I would like to be getting back a God Pharaoh's Gift or a Portal to Phyrexia or whatever like that. That's what I would really wanted to be looking at this card for. And again, I just don't think it does that well enough. You can get back some cute stuff, but again, somebody's got to find something in that 3-4 range that you really want to get back. And I'm not sure that's worth it when you could just be casting the card or get it back a myriad of other ways. You can do the same thing reliably for 4 or 5 mana in white only. So it's like, would you rather take that risk of having to mill myself and do something, or would you rather just get permanent cards back with 3 colorless black, white, get any permanent back as a battle? You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of cards I just think do too similar of a thing.
Yeah. I will say, though, again, flavor text here. Due to archaic Brazen Coalition guidelines regarding hats, a few Mycoids are now technically pirate captains. That's a good one. That is
the hat.
That, yeah. All right, next one is Ancient One. Which one is Ancient One?
I love this card. I love this card.
Which one's Ancient One? Is that
the Ancient One?
Oh, it's the blue-black mythic, right?
It's blue-black for a legendary 8/8 spirit god.
Oh, spirit, you say?
It cannot attack or block if you have less than 8 or more permanent cards in your graveyard.
Okay.
And for 4 mana, we can draw a card, then discard a card, and then mill target player equal to the discarded card's mana value.
That card's sweet.
This card is sick. Fatal...
Is it going in cube?
This card definitely will go in the cube, but also this card... This whole set makes me think, you know what? Delirium's back.
Yeah?
Sultai Delirium.
All right.
Get in.
I think all right.
We got, like, last set, we got a bunch of cards that let us mill ourselves for no reason, right? That are also permanent cards, right?
Sure.
We got Cruel Sangrophage, and we got the Picklock Prankster, and we still have the Merfolk Secret Keeper, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of permanents that let us mill ourselves. And now we have cards that pay off milling ourselves finally, right?
Sure.
And there's another card, I'm sure we'll get to it. If not, I'll make us get to it. That is another mythic payoff gold card for milling ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is pretty insane. But a 2-mana 8/8, yes, it gets fatal pushed. But I mean, you know, that's 8/8.
Yeah.
And for 4 mana, we can just start looting and milling.
This card seems pretty relevant as, again, being in the same color as, you know, Ricky's absolute favorite card, Otherworldly Gaze. But also, just being an 8/8 creature has a lot of effects on the game, right?
Stubborn Denial.
Right. It does a lot of stuff, particularly in Sultai, where, like, there's a lot of green cards that care about power of creatures you have on the battlefield.
Great Henge.
Yeah, it's on Great Henge. It's on the new mini Henge. We'll call it the medium Henge, which is, you know, again, kind of the medium version of the Great Henge. But there's several cards that do that. And again, a lot of them do cost double green. So, you know, mana, making that work may be a little bit tricky. But this is definitely a card to keep an eye on, given just the effects that having that 8/8 can have, right? If you can remove its abilities, right? If you can do some cute stuff that way, you just have an 8/8 on the battlefield really, really early. So, you know, Thing in the Ice, real strong card. So,
next card request is Twists and Turns. What card is that?
Twists and Turns costs a green. It's an enchantment uncommon. And if a creature you control would explore, instead scry 1 and then you explore. When it enters the battlefield, target creature you control explores. And then if you have 7 or more lands, you transform it. And it transforms into a cave. The cave taps to add green. And then you can pay 3 a green and tap it. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put them into your hand. put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Where'd you find this card?
I still don't see it.
It was spoiled 4 days ago. Hold on. I will
it just cost a single green?
Yep.
Did you just link the card? Okay.
This is where I found it. It's on Scryfall. It's on Scryfall. Yeah, it's a single green enchantment flip card. If a creature you control would explore, it said you scry one and then explore. And then when it enters the battlefield, target creature you control explores.
Oh, yeah, I don't see this card anywhere. Mythic Spoiler.
Yeah.
Weird. No.
Here it is on Scryfall.
Yeah. Huh. Right. Cards neat, I guess. I mean, if I'm exploring, I'm just trying to combo, right? I don't know if I want to play more non-hits for our explore combo deck.
Yeah, it's real tough because, again, if you control seven or more lands, you transform it. If that was like five, I would be into it just because then, you know, we can look for our combo pieces, right? Look at the top four cards of your library with your creature card from your hand. I think as far as like, hey, look, we find our combo pieces, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Thousand Moon Smithy. 2WW for a legendary artifact. When it enters the battlefield, create a white gnome soldier artifact creature token with this creature's power and toughness, or each equal number of artifacts and or other creatures you control. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you may tap 5 untapped artifacts and or creatures you control. If you do, transform Thousand Moon Smithy. The backside is Barracks of the Thousand, which has tapped add white. And then whenever you cast an artifact creatures or creature spell, use an artifact or creature spell using mana produced by Barracks of the Thousand, create a white gnome soldier artifact creature token with this creature's power and toughness, or each equal number of artifacts and or creatures you control. So we get little
constructs.
Whenever we cast a creature or an artifact using that mana.
This seems really cool for like some sick artifact deck in Pioneer, but Karn exists.
Karn does exist, yes.
Unfortunately, that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would love to see this in, like, some sort of Steel Overseer list, right? But, of course, Karn exists.
Want, want, Karn exists.
Karn do be existing. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'm, you know, there's cards that I've looked at that I've thought are pretty interesting to me. This is not a card that I'm super high on, but there's a lot of cards that I think have, you know, some amount of potential depending on where they're at. And that's kind of where I put this card. Doesn't super excite me, but I do see why people want to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. All right. Next one, Guardian of the Great Door, white for a 4/4 as it shall cost to cast this creature, as cost this spell, tap for untapped artifacts, creatures, and or lands you control, and with flying. What's
this card is insane.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of what was the 3/3 flyer for 2 that we had to only
Sarah
cast
Sarah Paragon or something like that.
Not Sarah Paragon.
Sarah Avenger. Yeah.
This card is terrible, but you're gonna get high rolled by this by an Angels player. They're gonna hit it off their collected company, and you're gonna feel like an idiot. This card's real bad. But it's also amazing. So,
but if you can vial it in,
exactly. It's just like if you hit this off collected company in Angels, you're a god. And if it's in your hand, you're the biggest idiot I've ever seen. Right. So like,
sure.
I don't think you're the biggest idiot. Between. I think for the same reasons we were talking about, you know, things you can do with Thraben Inspectors, things you can do with Voldaren Epicures, right? Those are two permanents that both can tap for this card. So if you're just all in on the, hey, I'm going to make tokens, I'm going to do whatever, you know, you can make another strong creature basically with Convoke, right? This has mandatory Convoke 4, but you can tap some of the clue tokens that you've made or blood tokens that you've made or something like that. So I don't think this card's as far-fetched as you might think. I'm not sure that you're going to play 4 of this. You're probably going to be so much convoking, and at some point you have to not convoke. You have to turn your creature sideways to attack instead of convoke. But
we're playing this earliest, turn 3? Because if we go like turn 1, Thraben Inspector, turn 2, Thraben Inspector, Siren, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we still need 2 mana. We still need 2 white.
We have to have 2 mana to play it.
Yeah.
Very true.
So I don't think it'll find a home in the Convoke deck. I think it's a way above rate Angel for the Angels tribal deck or like random Coco decks that will cheese you by playing this card.
Mm.
Sure. Again, right. We'll see how much how many tokens. Like, I could see some mono white aggro coming in that wasn't humans that that there can potentially get this out early.
There could be some really weird deck that plays like Recommission Helping Hand as like a weird like small ball reanimator deck that sure. like reanimates things like this or like the Great Ancient One and other like cards that are like two to three mana but have big power toughness.
I mean, I sure. would say if we want to live in a dream scenario, which I obviously do, if we have in our yard Guardian of the Great Door and that one, the Archfiend of the something, the one mana 1/1 that if you reanimate it instead make a 5/5.
Oh, yeah.
We can turn three, play the three mana reanimate spell that gives two counters, Death Touch and Lifelink, right? And get back Guardian of the Great Door and that one. And all of a sudden, we've got nine power worth of creatures on the battlefield on turn three.
Chris convinced me, I'm in.
I'm in. I'm just saying, what you want? You want to go to Magical Christmas Land? I'm there. You know, I invented Magical Christmas Land. My name's in the name.
All right. Molten Collapse, black and a red for a sorcery. Choose one. If you descended this turn, which just means if any permanent went to your graveyard, you may choose both instead. Destroy target creature or planeswalker or destroy target non-creature downland permanent with mana value one or less.
This has got to be the Rakdos Sack Mirror Breaker, right, Ruckman?
It's pretty good.
I sack off something. I kill your Mayhem Devil and your oven.
Yeah.
And your oven. I mean, we won. We won the Hunger Games. The Hunger Games are over. Right?
Have you seen the alt art for this?
It's great.
The alt art is like hilarious.
The I mean, this just means you don't have to play Colin's Command for the mirror anymore, right? Like,
right. So there's some pretty strong stuff you're doing here. The best hit's gotta be oven, right? Like, I guess if you're incidentally killing a Vessel of Nascency because your opponent like didn't leave mana up, you're happy. But we're trying to kill ovens and Pioneer, right?
We hit like a portal. This kills
Shieldred and the Fable token.
True. Yeah.
Oh wait, non-creature. It does?
Non-creature. Non-creature. Yeah. What about Old Growth Troll? Is Old Growth Troll, because it counts for
it costs three.
Nykthos, it still counts as a three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad face. All right. Well, you know, I tried. I don't know what else I can tell you.
All right. Tashana's
still enchantments in red black.
It does, yeah. Tashana's Tidebinder, two and a blue for a 3/2 Merfolk Wizard with Flash. Tashana's Tidebinder is the battlefield. Count up to one target activated or triggered ability. If an ability of an artifact, creature, or planeswalker is countered this way, that permanent loses all abilities as long as you control Tashana's Tidebinder. Remains on the belt. I fell asleep halfway through reading this card.
I was real excited on this card before the reminder text says you can't counter mana abilities because they don't use the stack. Yeah. So I was like, well, still, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was wondering if I could do it because just as any activated ability, but they don't use the stack. So I was excited for a moment, and then I came back to reality. But does Nykthos
use the stack? No.
What's that?
Can I respond to Nykthos being activated?
No, it's a mana ability. I was hoping you could, because I was like, sometimes their activated abilities are not always mana abilities. They do other stuff, you know?
I'll tell you what, though. Shout out to the Preston's video about how just magic cards have too many words on them now.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, though, your opponent goes like Karn minus, and then you're just like, no. And now your Karn says nothing. And then your opponent's like,
it's still a static ability, idiot.
Like, I guess I'll just kill you with other green stuff. I don't know
that it does have a static ability on it.
It loses all abilities.
That permanent loses all abilities.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm in now.
Yeah. I mean, this card's interesting, right? I think obviously the big thing is you're hoping to get planeswalkers. You can get ovens. You can get mayhem devils. So I know I'm thinking of all stat cards right now, but that's the most triggered abilities usually that you can activate. I don't think you can do anything cute with Lotus Field.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hit a saga?
You can hit sagas, so they would get the counters, but not the abilities, right? Well,
oh my gosh, I can counter my own Lotus Field triggered ability, right?
Yeah, and then your Lotus Field would lose.
No, it wouldn't, because it's not an artifact, creature, or planeswalker. So I counter the ability, and it still taps for three mana and has hexproof, right?
Sure.
So it's a more expensive way to do that again. I know we've been ending the turns and stuff like that, but this is another cute way to kind of do that, but also has more utility.
Some stuff here.
It costs more, I just think is the problem, but.
All right. We have Worst Boat here. Three red for a 5/5 Magmatic Galleon. Whenever the battlefield deals 5 damage to target opponent. Target creature opponent controls. then whenever one or more creatures your opponents control are dealt excess non-combat damage, create a treasure token. The reason why this card is worse, Boat, is it's Crew 2.
Right. I was going to say, we're one away from being really cool here.
Right. That and no flying, and it can't hit planeswalkers.
Yeah. Hey, it kills with Shieldred, though, I guess.
It does kill Shieldred in red.
It does. That's important. All right. Dusk Rose Reliquary, single white for an artifact. As an artificial cost to cast a spell, sacrifice an artifact or a creature. Ward 2, when Dusk Rose Reliquary enters the battlefield, exile target artifact creature an opponent controls until Dusk Rose Reliquary leaves the battlefield. So here's my question, right? Does this let us replace ossification in humans?
Hmm.
I don't want to give up board presence in order to keep removal up.
Yeah, big agree. I think, you know, one of the big reasons to play Leyline Binding is that it triggers all your stupid costs more stuff, you know, and has flash. So, you know, I think this card is a little more narrow and only hits artifacts or creatures.
We have a lot of ways to make it. We got like Adelaine tokens. If we want to go back to playing like a Thraven Inspector type card. I see this exists.
This is a strong removal spell. There's already a ton of really strong removal spells, you know?
Sure.
But I could see it. It's got Ward 2, so it's harder to lay land binding back. There's a lot of things that's trickier to do. But, you know, it doesn't hit enchantments, right? It only hits artifacts or creatures. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of times effects like that were kind of staying around anyway. So, I don't know.
All right. I mean, this isn't a card per se. This just says cards to hit with Discover could be fun. I mean, we could sit down and look at the Discover numbers later on, I guess.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Guardian of the Great Door is not a great one to hit with Discover because it says it's an additional cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Ricky and I were talking about that before we started recording. We can go through the great list of fun Discover targets for every card. That'd be kind of interesting to do. I can go through and compile our Discover numbers. Chimmel, the Inner Sun, 6 mana for legendary artifacts. Spells you control can't be countered. At the end of your end step, Discover 5.
This card's pretty cute.
This sure is a Karn target.
Yep, Karn target. Whoop.
Yep.
Glimpse the Core, 1 and a green for a sorcery. Choose one. Special labor for a basic forest card. Put that card on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. Return target here from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
We have Rampant Growth now.
We do.
We have Rampant Growth at home.
Mm-hmm. Gets a forest or a cave back. Or gets forest cave from the yard. From the
graveyard.
Yeah, cave from the graveyard. Forest from the deck.
I think it's interesting. I think one day mono green in some forms will kind of get the axe. And then this card will be good. I think in the meantime, a lot of the ramp you're wanting to play in Nykthos decks, you want to add the devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And this card does not do that. So there could be another deck out there that wants to be less of a devotion deck and more of a multicolor ramp deck. And I could see that, you know, but again, it doesn't get you a Lotus Field. It doesn't get you any interesting lands. You just got to be good old-fashioned ramping. So if they bring back like a Prime Time you want to ramp into or other Titans you want to ramp into or something like that, this could be there. If you just wanted to go big dinos, big stompy, something like that. You could definitely play this, right? I think it's great for the funsies players. If you're a player who's just wanting to go out and have some fun and play some big stompy deck, this is a huge card for you, right? Rampant Growth coming back is big. But I think in the competitive environment, it's not going to make it just yet.
All right. Last few cards here. Slytherin Stalker, single green for a 1/1 goblin with menace at the beginning of your end step. If you send this turn, put a 1 counter on Slytherin Stalker. 2 and a black, sacrifice it, target creature gets negative X to target creature's power. I think we talked about this a little bit last week. Card's neat, card's great. I love aggressive black one drops that keep growing. Menace is a fun aggressive mechanic, and it's a removal spell late game, so that's cool.
And this card is pushed.
Yeah, this card's very good. I think we kind of. The new honorary black one drop in our list of the things that leave something behind, right? This guy's just like, hey, you could sack the thing you left behind for me.
Yeah. I think the problem is, again, we don't have fetch lands, right? So,
Sunken Citadel, it's a cave, enters the battlefield tapped. Choose a color that enters the battlefield, add 1 mana of the chosen color, or add 2 mana of the chosen color for this mana only to activate abilities of land sources.
Hey, my Nykthos costs 1 less, right?
I got a better Nykthos enabler a little later.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Helping Hand, single white for a source, return target creature with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
Love that card. Actually. Card's great.
Card is very good. I like this card a lot.
And I can't stay away. It was already pretty good.
Yeah. Now we get one mana for our Grease Fang to come back.
But it does come back tapped, so we can't cruise. So yeah. You know.
Not as good in Grease Fang, unfortunately. I think it is good in the deck we were talking about earlier, which is the Wild Growth Walker combo.
For sure. Scytheclaw Raptor, 2 and a red for a 4/3 dinosaur player casts a spell. If it isn't their turn, Scytheclaw Raptor deals 4 damage to them.
Card's not good because no deck, I feel like, actually wants to cast a lot of spells on other players' turns.
I will say, Dinosaur Hype, I think during the deck build, the Bruise, we'll probably do a dinosaur list because there are a lot of really fun dinosaurs in this set. For sure. And then second last card here, Ward of the Inner Sky, single white for a 1/2 human soldier. As long as there are 3 more counters on Ward of the Inner Sky, it has flying and vigilance. Tap 3 untapped artifacts and or creatures you control, put a 1/1 counter on Ward of the Inner Sky. Scry 1, activate only as a sorcery. So, I mean, you know, if we can chain off some Thali's Lieutenants, this card's pretty sick in humans. My biggest problem here is the fact that we can only act as a sorcery, right? Like, it'd be kind of nice if we had, if there was like a ground stall for whatever reason, we could end a turn, activate it. But the fact that we have to do it as a sorcery is kind of a letdown on this card.
Huge letdown. Absolutely massive letdown on the card. I think the card, if you could do it at instant speed, I think is playable.
The world we live in where this is at instant speed.
Yeah. I think without it, this card's not going to see play as I see it.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting that, again, that you don't have to tap it, so you can potentially activate this multiple times, which would be great if we could do it at instant speed and we could just, like, find the card we're looking for, right? Like, if we need something to kind of big end the game out. But, yeah. Last card, though. It's Bard Class time. It's Quinth, Firstborn of Gishath. Red and a green for a 2/3 legendary dinosaur with haste. When is Quinth Firstborn of Gishath enters the battlefield, you may pay 2. When you do, target dinosaur you control deals damage to another target creature equal to its power. Okay, well, it's not quite a Bard Class card. We could play it for free in Bard Class.
Mm-hmm. There's so many better options now.
I know, but it's another haste card for Semet, at least.
There we go. There's a couple we do not hit that I think we need to talk about.
All right, what you got, Ricky?
I want to talk about the Myco Tyrant.
Okay, lay it on us.
Green, black, and 1 for a star trample elder fungus. His power and toughness are each equal to the number of creatures you control that are fungi or saprolings, At the beginning of your end step, you make X11 fungus creature tokens with this creature cannot block, where X is the number of times that you descended this turn, which is any time a permanent card was put into your graveyard from anywhere. I think this card is kind of wild. This is going to be playing like more into like the Sultai Delirium kind of deck that we're talking about earlier. But this guy can very easily be like a play on turn 4 or a play on turn 3 with a mana dork, right? That's going to be like a 3 mana that makes like 2 to 3 tokens and is a 3/3 trampler that just threatens to overrun the board very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't count like just the number of times we were milled. It counts every single card that went to our graveyard. So that's I think this card's very insane.
Sure. What else you got?
I got Restless Vents, the black red manland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It taps for black or red. For 3 mana, it becomes a 2/3 black and red insect with menace that when it attacks, we may discard a card if we do draw a card. And, you know, Hive is a pretty hard card to, like, beat in value, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this feels like we get to fix a lot of our red-black mana problems. This just feels like a better 2-of in Rakdos midrange. It does what we want to do, which is throw away our bad draws to get to our better draws, right?
Exiling the card is starting to feel a little less impactful with Hive now anyway as well.
Right, and Hive animates for 4, this animates for 3.
Yeah.
I think this card's very good. And then the last card I want to bring up, and this is a card that's going to make my top 5.
Okay.
Almost guaranteedly, is Hulking Raptor.
Oh, yeah.
Which is green, green, two, and it's an important green, green for a 5-3. For some sicko reason, this card has ward 2. And at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, it adds green, green to your mana pool.
That's pretty strong.
This card, it is a, like, just you wait till next turn in mono green, right? But mm-hmm. it is kind of difficult to mess with ward 2. And being a 4-4, so like you can't steal it with the Rack-Sack deck. You can't fatal push it without some extra work, right? If you play this down on turn 3 because of some mana elf, like you're guaranteed going off next turn because your Nykthos activation is going to be free for your first one, or you get 2 green to start whatever the nonsense is you want to do.
For sure.
I'm seeing like less and less Vorniclix. And I feel like this could fill in those like 2 slot that people are playing like Uvenwald Monstrosity and other weird cards in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, if Karn gets the axe, this is a good kind of extender way to play mono green. And I feel like hitting these off of your Storm the Festival is not bad. And no. They are big enough so they will trigger Kiora draw cards. So I think this card's very strong. I don't think it's a 4 of in mono green, but I can definitely see this as like a 2-3 of in mono green.
Sure.
Fair enough. I got a couple quick hits for us.
Yeah.
It's
I wanted to hit on Subterranean Schooner real quick. 2 mana 3/4 with crew 1, which I think is pretty solid. You know, again, gets crewed by Thraben Inspectors, all the little random mana dorks that can do that. And then whenever it attacks, target creature that crewed this turn explores. So, like, you are making your other creatures bigger or getting lands out of the way, drawing cards. This is definitely a, you know, a worse looter scooter, but I'm not sure that it's a ton, ton worse with that 4 butt, you know? I think this card could see some stuff there. So I wanted to bring up that card real quick. I want to bring up the new Galta. The new Galta is just a massive beater that when it enters the battlefield, you know, put any creature cards from your hand into play. That's a huge reanimator target to just bring all your friends with it. Obviously you don't have a bunch of legendary cards in your hand, but if you were to play a deck that was kind of all in on reanimating, this is a card that you would want to see with it, have it bring an Atraxa with it, something like that, where, you know, you can actually put lethal on the board pretty quickly there.
Mm-hmm.
And the last card I wanted to spend a minute talking about was the Bloodletter of Alkazatz. Alkazatz. This card has to be translated, but this card is 1 in BBB for a 2/4 flyer. And whenever an opponent would lose life during your turn, they lose twice that much life instead. So the big combo here is Gary.
Oh, yeah.
Where we just kill our opponents dead. This is a card that I was like, if this cost only a single black, it would be worse. This card being triple black and 1 for 3 devotion, doubling life loss. It reminds you on the card that damage causes loss of life. This is functionally a 4/4 flyer, right? If you can pump it, it gets even bigger. All your creatures are doing double damage. Whenever an opponent would lose life, they lose twice that much life instead. All your creatures deal double damage, and we get a Gary combo and triple black. I think you're going to start to see mono black come back as an option to play with this card. Does not
make life loss happen, or no?
What do you mean? It does not make life loss happen. Is it 2/4 flyer?
No. Does waste not? Is one of the modes your opponent loses 2 life, you gain 2 life?
It's discard a card, or it's you draw a card, you add 2 mana, or you make a 2/2 zombie. I don't think there's a life
in that,
right?
Yeah.
It's, yeah, you draw a card, make a 2/2 zombie, add black mana.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Never mind. I kind of was like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of ways to source, but there's all kinds of ways to make your opponent lose life. So I think this is a very, very interesting card that flies and is worth its 4 mana, giving you triple black devotion to go 4 mana into 5 mana Gary, win the game, you know? Lots of permanents, you know, a lot of enchantments in black that are things. So this is a card I kind of want to was like, man, this is a strong card nobody seems to be talking about. So also not legendary for whatever reason. So you could have multiple of these in play. But anyway, those are the cards I wanted to go over quick. There's definitely more cards that I think are interesting. But
yeah. Real quick, we also didn't talk about Zoetic Glyph, which is 2 in a blue for the new scissors. Artifact is a golem with the base power of 5/4. It shoots other types, and when it is put into the graveyard, discover 3. So it's a scissors that leaves something behind, potentially.
Yeah,
it, you can cascade into the next scissors.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely a big deal. Yeah. I think the ability to cascade could be cute here, right? Just as like, a, hey, I'm going to get something else. So you get a little bit of resiliency. Obviously regular scissors, I think, makes them five fives anyway. So this definitely costs one more, but this could be better than the 3-mana creature, the 3-mana 1/3 that makes a creature a 5/5.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, that one, it just, I think it's easier to kill than maybe this enchantment is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm about it. I think scissors could be a cute deck. We're seeing a lot of aggressor deck come back, and scissors is a deck that, although, you know, if you're playing the Counterspells version, Discover 3 is not as good. But if you want to play Red-Blue again,
yeah,
you know, you can beat down pretty quick. You can reasonably compete with Heroic, I feel like. So,
do you think there's a point in time where they thought about not printing Waterlogged Hulk?
Ooh, that's kind of funny, yeah. It crafts with an island. It's a watertight gondola. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, mm-hmm, sure. All right, well, that will do it for this week's episode. Of course, I want to say thank you to all for Patreon, patreon.com/crew3mtg. Silvergate tiers available to help support the show, keep things coming out, keep things going. Of course, every tier has their own benefits and rewards. Every tier, of course, though, does get access to the Patreon mailbag, which we are running to the end of the Patreon mailbag. So if you're a patron, make sure you get... Because we get more questions in, so we can answer more of those. This last one, certainly for Ricky, can we get a Room Springa update?
Can we get a what?
A Room Springa update after your beard fiasco. Are you going back to the farm now? Essentially.
Oh no! I gave away the Amish life. Actually,
yeah.
They're not a big fan of Magic the Gathering cards. Actually, I don't know that. I don't know if the Amish people, they're probably lovely people. They probably play a lot of Magic the Gathering. So it just turns out I'm bad at raising barns. I'm better at burning them down, you know?
Okay, sure.
That's also terrible. I don't know. I'm out of jokes. Chalk this one up as a loss.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will do it for this episode. Thank you again to the World Patreon, patreon.com/crew3mtg. I also want to remind you real quick that next Saturday, November the 11th, will be our extra live stream. We've already got a couple donations in, so thank you very much. But of course, if you want to hold off until starting next Friday, when the incentive booster packs open up for kind of claim, be sure to wait for that. I will include a link to the page of this week's episode so you can kind of note it, watch it, look over it, understand everything on how we're going to ship stuff out and that kind of stuff, and take a peek at the schedule we have planned for the 11th, we start about 10 o'clock. You can see our scheduled events. It's going to be a lot of fun. We always have fun with Extra Life, and we have a lot of cool stuff to give away this year. I'm excited to see what people get in the booster pack and the mystery boosters. Yeah. I am most excited for mystery boosters. So be sure to get some boosters. We'll send you some cards. Hopefully you hit some bounties, and we'll send you some even cooler singles. We got a lot of stuff lined up, so it should be a blast. Be sure to tune in and join us for that. I want to say thank you all again for tuning in every week in, week out. Next week is episode 200. Wow. And I think that for that case, the full set will be out. So maybe maybe instead of being a Patreon exclusive this time around, maybe we instead give everyone the Ixalan top 5 debate. What do you think?
Ooh, sounds good to me. I will coffee up. We will ready. I will put on my boxing gloves. And I will sweep out the alley because somebody is not surviving.
Ruckman's also going to eat 200 commons from War of the Spark. Live on camera.
Live on camera.
Yeah.
I have to do a double nugget centurion.
you get to eat all the uncommon planeswalkers.
Oh, no. Okay, I already have my health screening for the year. I could be as bad as I want now. I'm insured, baby. All right. Well, let's wrap this up, gentlemen. Where can they find you on the socials?
Hey, you can find me on the tweeters at @its_Christmas, and Christmas has no T.
You can find me on Twitter at also Steve. And if my life calms down, you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/crew3mtg.
Awesome. And of course, you can find me at crew3podcast on Twitter. Probably episode 200, the video podcast, will make a return. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. I've got some other videos in the pipeline going to go up on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/crew3mtg. And post Extra Life, I'm going to start streaming most Sunday early morning, early afternoons for a few hours. So be sure to join in over there, and we're going to start moving VODs over to YouTube. So early, so starting kind of Extra Life, we'll have more content going on, and yeah, so keep up with. So, and if you want to see even more content, check out some of those milestones, because we have things like, if we hit certain amounts, we're going to do more wrestling streams this next year. We're going to have deck techs. There'll be a lot of stuff, so be sure to help us raise some money for a great cause. Get some cool cards and have fun with us. We'll talk to you next week's episode 200. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. Bye.